CJ Radio International presents the longest-running international show, The Happy Station Show, produced and presented by Keith Perron.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome again to another edition of your Sunday program, Happy Station, from PCJ Radio International. Now, we have quite a few things to get to today, so I'll do everything at the beginning of the program because I'm afraid that I might not have time at the end. This, of course, is the summer period, and as you're probably aware, every summer we like to bring some special programs, and that's exactly what we're doing again today. Another interesting program from the Radio Netherlands Archives, but let's get to that in a little bit. We are going to be preparing a special two-hour edition of Happy Station, and we want, of course, your involvement in it. Now, the program will be live, and we are going to be opening up the phone lines to it. So, if you have any ideas or would like to take part in that program, let us know with the email address that I give later on at the program. You can also let us know through our Facebook page. Just do a search for PCJ Radio International, and also through our Patreon page. And if you become a patron, yes, if you become a patron, you can download all kinds of fascinating content from Radio Nederland from 1947 all the way to 1992. And it isn't very expensive. It's very cheap, in fact. So go and do that now. Anyway, enough of this chit-chat today, because we are in our summer series mood. Or mode, actually, is what I really meant to say. And today we're going to be presenting to you a special program. It's a drama. Yes, a drama. From June 15th, 1972. It's called At the King's Pleasure, and it was produced by the drama department of Radio Nederland.
Radio Nederland presents a play for radio, At the King's Pleasure, adapted from a Dutch stage play by Jean-Baptiste Coquelin. It was translated by Harry Kliphaus and produced by Herman Fortuyn. At the King's Pleasure. The Court of France, on the 12th of June, 1710, at 10 o'clock in the morning. A guard's lieutenant strides into the hall of the royal palace at Versailles. He makes for the chamberlain on duty.
Mm. Name, sir?
Michel d'Albert.
Army officer?
A lieutenant in the Roussillon Guard.
What is it you want?
An audience with the king, monsieur.
Papers?
Monsieur?
The petition addressed to His Majesty?
Here.
Sir, we have no manners.
I'm sorry, but neither have you.
You're requesting a promotion to the rank of captain?
Is that an outrageous ambition?
If all these requests were granted, we'd have an army composed entirely of field marshals. Letter of recommendation?
Sir?
Is this handwriting supposed to be legible?
My commanding officer fights better than he writes.
I certainly hope he does, the sake of God and France. Your pass to the Royal Antechamber.
Sir?
Very well. Papers are in order. You may sit down. The king may deign to remember to call you in for an audience.
Would you describe His Majesty's memory as reliable?
That depends on the speed with which His Majesty's a diligent servant brings him the relevant documents.
No, don't bother to hurry. I have all day. Marble and mirrors. Two Swiss guards. That must be the royal suite. A hot day today, men.
Huh?
Short of day to be in the field rather than indoors, what?
What?
Not much fun standing guard like a bewigged flunky.
Your Schweizer, wir stehen nicht, mal halten und fahren.
Yes. Oh, well. So much for conversation.
If you'd wait just a few moments, madam, I'll submit your petition to His Majesty immediately.
I am extremely grateful to you, monsieur.
Welcome, madame. Pray, sit down.
Whose palace is this, monsieur? Yours?
I'm sorry to see you in mourning. Is it your father who died?
No.
Your mother?
My husband.
A harsh fate for a man to die so young.
My husband, Count Vartini, was 70. He died in action in northern Italy, a field marshal.
Count Vartini? A hero, madame. One envies him his death in battle for France and the king.
Why not follow his example, sir?
You're too kind, madame.
You are also a military man?
Michel d'Albert, madame, lieutenant in the Roussillon Guard, and before this day is over, a captain, I hope, thanks to His Majesty's kindness.
I consult with marshals, monsieur. I have little desire to make conversation with lieutenants and such small fry.
There was a time, madame, when the great Vartini himself was but a modest lieutenant and possessed qualities the later field marshal lacked. Youth, good looks, and a cheerful disposition.
Please go in, father. His Majesty will be informed of your arrival.
Thank you kindly, my dear man. You'll find your reward in heaven.
A priest.
My dear children, I hope I'm not disturbing you.
No, father, you are not.
No, no, please don't move. I can just wriggle in between you two. I'll put my basket down here. Apples, you know. Now for my breviary. You talk. I'll pray. A proper division of labor. Children? Children, this is not right. I'm praying away to keep my side of the bargain, but you two are not talking.
My words do not seem to get through to madame, father.
Oh. Excuse me disturbing you, madame. Monsieur here has something to say to you.
Monsieur has nothing to say to me.
Oh. Well, you heard, monsieur. You have nothing to say, she says.
Monsieur does not want to say anything.
I apologize again. Madame, monsieur does not want to say anything. Well, it's just like being at home in the confessional. From the grill on the left to the grill on the right. And vice versa.
It's
way, please, monsieur. Your petitions will be presented to His Majesty.
I'm obliged to you, sir. Thank you, monsieur.
That little gouty fellow, I know. The Marquis of Châtillon, one of the king's most obsequious courtiers.
And I know that beardless whippersnapper, he's La Chastre, the aspiring poet.
Ah. Good day, father.
Good day, my son.
Monsieur. I was just conversing with Monsieur La Chastre here, a true son of the poetic muses.
Oh, come now, Marquis.
No?
I prefer being a son of our mother, the Holy Church. But please don't let me disturb you.
Wit, censure, and modesty, all in a single line, and from a priest at that. Well done, father. But seriously, La Chastre, that verse is admirable. Purest Racine.
Oh.
A majestic opening for a panegyric upon His Majesty. How did you say the line went?
Whene'er the sun god's chariot borne on fiery wing of flying horses fall...
On fiery wing of flying horses fall. Oh, how old are you, young man?
22, my lord.
Ah, God is still with France. Continue, my lad.
Whene'er the sun god's chariot borne on fiery wing of flying horses fall, sets all the heavens ablaze.
Oh, that's not the way to declaim good verse, my boy. I'll show you how to do it. Whene'er the sun god's chariot borne on fiery wing of flying horses fall, sets all the heavens ablaze. Mere mortals quail and blink before this glaring ring, and blind with awful wonder, turn aside their gaze. imagine, His Majesty may be actually hearing this soon.
Delightful! The way you declaim.
Oh, this is nothing. What in the capital was placed on Petrarch's brow is therefore not our due. Thine is the poet's bay. O laureled poet king, we are thy followers now, who meekly tread where thou...
Silence, if you please. His Majesty has just risen. And these mornings his temper is just awful. So please don't make it any worse, will you?
Where thou, O Louis, showed the way.
A marquis silenced by a servant.
Hush, my son.
I bless the lucky star, my dear Monsieur La Chastre, that led me to make the acquaintance of so great a poet.
Oh, you make me blush, my lord.
Oh, I can see it gracing your temples, the poet laureate's garland that you hope to win this day.
You really are... too kind, my lord.
I recognize true merit, because I happen to be a writer myself.
Oh?
You allowed me to read your masterpiece, so I'll show you mine. The tome I have brought along to present to His Majesty.
A whole book?
133,000 words, lovingly written out in my own hand. Not mentioning full stops and commas.
And what is the subject, my lord?
My theme is bound, I think, to rouse the enthusiasm of any true patriot. Certainly that of a military man such as the guard's lieutenant sitting opposite us.
Sir, you're making me curious.
This is my title, The Art of War Triumphs. Or the strategy and tactics of His Majesty King Louis, by the grace of God, the 14th of France, favorably compared to those of Caesar, Hannibal, and Alexander the Great.
I don't believe it.
Modesty forbids me to read you a passage.
Oh, but you are robbing us of a rare pleasure indeed.
You feel that I should overcome my natural reluctance.
Oh, that is what all of us feel.
Well, then I must yield to your pleading. Now, what chapter to choose? Best of all, I think, a rousing description of battle. The truly heroic gallantry displayed by our King Louis in the Battle of Neerwinden.
This is new to me.
What an inspiring sight. France's greatest monarch had mounted his steed in the dead of night.
Wrong.
What?
His Majesty always rides in a coach. No self-respecting mount could carry a man of his girth.
Were you there to see it, monsieur?
I wasn't. Were you?
What an inspiring sight. France's greatest monarch had mounted his horse in the dead of night, surrounded by his princes...
His bastards and his mistresses.
Monsieur, your remark is not merely unseemly, but historically incorrect. Great kings, being chivalrous, do not drag their ladies into the melee of battle.
Go on.
One royal gesture of his gloved hand, and in fluid motion 44 squadrons of cavalry went pouring downhill. In the forefront, like a ship borne by the raging waves of battle, His Majesty's plumed hat was seen bobbing up and down.
My lord, precisely what battle are you describing?
The Battle of Neerwinden, July the 14th, 1693.
You must be dreaming. Huh? That night, His Majesty the King was sleeping the sleep of the just here, at Versailles. In fact, just behind that door there.
Do you doubt my word?
I am sure you are lying.
Monsieur!
Let me give you the correct version. The enemy forces of the Prince of Orange are encircled at Neerwinden. Our victory seems assured, but on the eve of the battle, His Majesty, comfortably encamped in the rear guard, suddenly declares that he wishes to return home. Madame de Maintenon, it seems, cannot bear to be without him another hour. The Marshal de Luxembourg, in command of the troops, begs the king to change his mind. He goes down on his knees. But the king is not to be moved. The forces are to break camp. The battle is postponed. What you are pleased to call the Battle of Neerwinden took place 3 weeks later, involving but a fraction of the troops, and was really no more than a skirmish.
How dare you insult the dignity of the king?
There is not a soldier of France who isn't familiar with that act of heroism.
If my description was not truthful, do you think that His Majesty would have hinted to the Chancellor, who happens to be a cousin of my wife's, that considering the merits of my book, he intends to make me a Lieutenant General today?
Oh, you a general? Where have you seen action?
Monsieur!
Silence, please! His Majesty is dressing.
Oh, may His Majesty forgive me. I forgot myself. But what patriot would not burn with indignation after such scandalous allegations?
Patriot?
Don't mind him, my son.
I said silence!
My dear La Chastre, you are the son of a respected magistrate. I am the 17th Marquis of my name. Yet the lives we lead are inferior to that of that humble valet, the lowly son of the people who showed his deep concern for His Majesty's peace and well-being a moment ago. He spends all his days in the warmth radiated by our benign monarch, whom you so aptly call a sun god. Oh. Think, my dear La Chastre, of the great things that may well be taking place at this very moment behind that thin wall.
Cool.
Ah, the king's valets.
Have you ever seen a more ungrateful swine?
Shut up, you don't want to lose your job, mate.
I spent 3 hours pressing his coat yesterday, and he says it's still creased. If you can find a single crease and using your blind granny's magnifying glass, I'll take myself off to the Bastille.
Well, never mind. Stop shouting before the whole palace hears you. Stay here and I'll run to get another coat.
Tell us, my good man, how is His Majesty on this promising summer's day?
As you're asking, my lord, I might as well tell you that it's going to be no use.
No use.
You're all of you wasting your time. He sat there, laughing his head off at the petitions. A widow as poor as a church mouse, he said, asking for her husband's pension. Well, she's only 23. She can find somebody to be nice to her.
Oh, no.
A guard's lieutenant without fortune or distinction.
Thank you.
A windbag of a marquis. And a silly young ass with poetical pretensions.
Oh.
They're all beggars, he said. Had to get something for nothing. Begging your pardon, of course.
My friend, did he have something to say in praise of our mother, the Holy Church?
Well, he didn't say anything about you right now. He's having an argument with the Secretary of State. If his breakfast gives him indigestion, he'll declare war on Prussia. Then it'll be up to military men, like the lieutenant here, to get themselves killed for the glory of God, France, and the royal tummy. Coming! Coming!
Yes, the other coat, quick, man! He's getting impatient.
Well, he's wearing his nightcap and free undershirts. He couldn't possibly catch cold.
My dear Mr. Poet, your talent won't be appreciated here. Pearls to the swine.
Why don't you keep a civil tongue in your head, sir?
The word swine has been used here before this very morning.
It was used by lackeys of the lowest class.
Spending all their days in the warmth radiated by the king, I think you said.
Oh. Once I have the rank of Lieutenant General, I'll be in a position to make or break subalterns such as you.
You don't know a musket from a mortar.
I have 700 pages of higher strategy to my credit.
A pity the swine that had to die for the leather binding.
Sir, another word?
If you demand satisfaction, I am at your service.
King and country need my services too urgently for me to risk my life settling a dispute with a nobody.
Do you realize why France is sick, a king a tyrant, and its people desperate? Because the court is swarming with high-born flatterers out to praise the king's silliest whims. But a monarch betrayed by his profiteering friends risks losing his wits today and his head tomorrow.
Ah, sir, you have betrayed yourself. You are an agitator, a rabble-rouser, an enemy of France and the monarchy. I shall reveal your treason to the king.
And he will make you a general on the spot. Why, a strategist of your caliber deserves to be made a Marshal of France.
Oh, what a day!
Ah, the king's principal doctor.
What a day!
Tell me, Professor Fagon, does the king's health give you cause for concern?
Oh, it's the old trouble, Marquis. He hasn't had a movement for 3 days.
I hope it's no cause for alarm.
My lord, it is. And now, please excuse me. I must run and fetch the clyster by...
What's that I hear? But, my dear child, tears?
I am ruined.
You are what?
Hush! My husband was killed.
Oh, I am sorry, my child. Where was it?
In northern Italy.
When?
6 months ago.
What a blow.
No. He was 65 when we married and I was 18.
Who was he then?
Vatigny.
The Marshal of France. Do you still think of him?
Certainly not.
Such a young girl and so little feeling.
I am no longer a young girl.
Any children?
By him, thank heavens, no.
You bear a grudge against him?
He owes me two precious things. My youth and my money.
Are you devoted to riches, my child?
He left me penniless, father. Everything went to the children from his first marriage.
And his pension?
Not a sou paid out. That's why I'm here. To beg the king for what is my right.
He will grant it to you.
He doesn't even pay his living soldiers.
Louis isn't as bad as all that. I know him too well.
You know him personally?
Yes, we were boyhood friends. My mother served at court. Louis was a clever lad, quick on his feet and a fine swimmer. We used to play knuckle bones in the Park Royal, or we'd slip out for a dip in the Seine. He hasn't forgotten. I'm a simple priest buried away in the provinces, but any time I'm near Versailles, I get an invitation to drop in. I usually bring him a basket of apples from my orchards. Purifies the blood, he says. Do you think such a perfectly ordinary human being would be more wicked than you or I?
You are here without a petition.
I would rather remain the man I am.
If you are called in before me, Father, will you speak a few words... on my behalf.
For a small penitence, my child.
Oh, whatever you say.
Well then, one kindly thought for poor dead Vatigny.
10 rosaries would be less trouble.
Now, I've found my clyster pipe and the book of medicine, but can't find the page I want. Oh, what was that prescription? For a stimulative, insinuative and detersive enema, take 10 parts Levantine natural roses, 3 parts cassia fistula, 2 parts chamomile, 1 part rhubarb and a pinch dried senna. Or should it be 3 parts chamomile, 2 parts rhubarb, 1 part dried senna and a pinch cassia fistula? Or was it 3 parts rhubarb, 2 parts dried senna, 1 part cassia fistula and a pinch chamomile? Oh, this weather of 4 times 3 times 2 times 1 equals 24 variations possible. Oh, I might as well concoct something from whatever springs to mind. Anyway, a churning internal revolution would do His Majesty a power of good. A power of good.
Ah, Marquis Chatillon, what can I do for you?
I can't begin to tell Madame how much I regret my interruption. But could I have a word with His Reverence to discuss very briefly a personal matter of the highest importance?
Don't bother to apologize, my lord. I shall withdraw.
Ah, thank you. Now, if Your Reverence will not take it amiss, I could not help overhearing that you are, in fact, among His Majesty's most dearly prized friends.
Oh, nothing so grand, my lord.
You must be feeling deep concern and anxiety at the news of our good king's disturbed health.
Oh, that. Well, he simply eats too much. He did as a child, you know, 12 cream cakes, 3 pounds of plum.
I have a little more experience of the stresses of high office, Your Reverence. His Majesty is badly overburdened.
Well, of course he is. Man wasn't created for the digestion of 12 cakes and 3 pounds of plums.
Your Reverence, I believe that all the King's loyal subjects should stand shoulder to shoulder and help His Majesty.
You mean I should eat these apples myself?
Oh, certainly not. Your kind gift from an old and intimate friend will sustain His Majesty's spirits, surrounded as he is by traitors.
Traitors?
His own valet calls him a pig.
But my housekeeper says the same about me, yet she is devoted to me.
The lieutenant here can't wait to see His Majesty's head roll.
Oh.
Now, I have a proposal to make. Would it be fair to bother His Majesty with matters that have no bearing on the national interest?
I know nothing about the national interest.
That would make you a most valuable royal counsellor.
Me?
Now consider, Your Reverence. Would it be in the national interest for you to draw His Majesty's benevolent attention to women who sell themselves for gold?
No need, my lord. They've always had more success at gaining His Majesty's benevolence than any other group in the kingdom.
Wouldn't you say that it is in the national interest to surround the king with servants whose ability, insight, and loyalty are beyond doubt?
So you are...
Not so loud, Your Reverence. Affairs of state.
You are saying...
That if you keep silent here and speak up elsewhere, I shall soon find an opportunity of recommending you to His Majesty for high office.
What you are trying to say is that I should be diligent about pleading your affairs with the king, since they are beneficial to his indigestion, whereas I should not raise the affairs of Madame, with whom I had the pleasure of speaking earlier, since these would only add to His Majesty's burden.
No! This is scandalous.
Do not put yourself out, monsieur. I am used to being insulted by elderly gentlemen.
No, madame, I assure you His Reverence has misunderstood me.
Generally, I am slow to get the point, but when I do understand something, I understand it well.
Draw your sword, Marquis, and defend yourself. I demand satisfaction for madame.
Withdraw, lieutenant. You are risking too much.
Sheathe your sword, you young fool.
Before night falls, you shall give me satisfaction, or my servant will horsewhip you.
You young braggart, before night falls, you shall leave this palace for the Bastille prison. The royal apartments are no place for a brawl.
I
demand satisfaction, Mr. Chamberlain.
I am entirely at your service, Professor.
This evening at the cemetery of Saint-Germain.
What time?
10 o'clock at dusk.
The weapons?
Swords.
Your servant, Professor.
Yours, Mr. Chamberlain.
I think, my Lord Marquis, that after all, I know best the customary form in the royal apartments.
I am most grateful to you, monsieur.
I was merely doing my duty as an officer and gentleman, madame. It deserves no gratitude.
But, monsieur...
Ah, the chamberlain with the list of names.
His Majesty expects the priest Lilibon.
So, I'm the first.
Do not forget me, father.
I won't, my child, don't worry.
Your apples, father.
Oh, gracious me. I almost forgot my precious basket. Vital to the welfare of the nation. A pound of apples and the internal policy will be restored to normal. After you, please, Mr. Chamberlain.
Well.
After you.
Oh, do you really think, Marquis, my poem will make an impression on the king?
Don't disturb me, young man. I am arranging my thoughts.
Oh, I'm trying to do the same. I've spent hours reciting my poem before the mirror, and now I can't remember a line. When ere the sun god's chariot, born on flying wing... No, that can't be right. Where's my text? The sun god's chariot, born on fiery wing. Of course. Fiery wing.
Oh, the priest is back.
Well, father.
Oh, His Majesty was most kind. Very benevolent, unusually so.
Thank
His Majesty was most liberal.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it.
He insisted on handing out an entirely unrequested gift.
It's something wrong, Father?
Just listen to this, Madame de Parlerois. Patent granted to the priest Ambroise Philippe Nepomuzen Lilibon by His Majesty's Grace, appointed as royal visitor of La Ferté Abbey. The office carries the rank of canon, the right to a scarlet hat, the title of Monsignor, and annual emoluments of 100 gold louis.
Oh, but Father, I should say Monsignor.
Monsignor, Monsignor, why not Holy Father?
But it should give you great happiness.
The happiness? I, a Monsignor, I, a royal visitor, arriving on horseback in the courtyard of an abbey at the head of my retinue. Debating the pros and cons of Nestorianism at dinner with the Right Reverend Abbot. Listening to disputes in Latin on the number of angels that can balance on the point of a needle. Inspecting the accounts of the monastery. Well, if I took the books home with me, my housekeeper could check them.
And what about me, Monsignor? No, Father, no,
I couldn't get a word in edgeways. I was shown out in a matter of minutes. And he didn't even want my apples.
If he was so generous to you, why not to us?
Madame, a ruler who elevates one who wishes to remain as he is will grant nothing to another who wants to be elevated. I'm sorry, a mere village priest could have helped you. A monsignor is powerless. Adieu.
Ah, the Chamberlain. This time it will be my turn.
Raymond Lachastre?
Oh, I'm afraid.
Lachastre?
Are you Lachastre?
Oh, yes. No, that is to say, no, I'm not.
A young man, are you Lachastre?
Yes, your Excellency, I beg your pardon. I am.
Yes, the King expects you.
Go, you silly ass.
After you, Chamberlain. I'll follow.
He asked for it, and now he's getting it.
I wonder who'll be getting it next.
Hold your peace, will you?
It's going well.
The king is laughing. Laughing? Oh, well, that should stir up his bowels.
Thy sunlight gives thee blood and life, and a god divine. Hush, fools.
Well, carry on, Mr. Poet. We're enjoying your performance.
Me up like a dog. Wait for my next poem. All Paris shall know that he's a bully.
But no,
as
sir,
for you, Marquis, I will write a lampoon that will make you ridiculous in the eyes of your contemporaries and future generations.
Scandalous.
Exit one young poet. Cured for life, one hopes. Experience should make a man of him.
Madame the widow-law, Vatigny Saint-Léger.
My turn.
Allow me to show you the way, madame. It's the only thing I can do for you.
The ranks are thinned out, Marquis. Only you and I are left. Ha, ha.
I can't help laughing, young man, when I think of what is in store for you. Scandalous, the king will say. And I shall say, your majesty is absolutely right. An officer, your majesty, bound by his oath. He would like to see your head roll. That's what he said. A plot, your majesty. Your valet using a word I'm not prepared to repeat. Your physician calling for internal revolution. And then, madame, resisting your monetary policies and denouncing the army's high command. What's that? My advice in this matter, your majesty? Strike before it is too late, I'll say. Punish the culprits. The ringleader, first of all. Solitary confinement. My generalship, sire? Oh, no, no. With all due respect, I do not wish to discuss it at this time. The situation is far too grave.
I have nothing more to say to His Majesty.
But you nonetheless wait here. You will be called back when His Majesty has looked more closely into your case. Michel Delboeuf, Lieutenant of the Roussillon Guards Regiment. Philippe-Henri Pompon, Marquis of Châtillon. Which of you two gentlemen?
Oh, feel free to go first, my lord.
Very well, Lieutenant. I'll go. You have nothing to hope for.
It seems, madame, that your audience with the king did not go well.
Yeah, you are actually speaking to me now, sir.
And why not, madame?
A little earlier, you wouldn't let me thank you.
So the
King wants more time to think about your case, madame?
He wasn't thinking. The man I saw in there was playing cat and mouse with me.
Isn't the king in there?
I have seen no king, merely an aging lecher.
What did he say then, madame?
He just sat there, leering at me like the elders at Susanna.
Why weren't you allowed to leave?
But I suppose he wants another chance to feast his eyes on an unhappy woman.
Why stay, having been so insulted?
Why did you allow them to call you a braggart and a fool?
A good soldier does not flee from the battlefield.
Do you realize what being penniless means to a woman?
Have you no family?
I'm not going back to them. They sold me, an immature girl, to the highest bidder.
You hate Vartini?
With all my heart.
Because you loved him?
Oh, there are no limits to the dreams of a girl of 18 newly married to a man praised by all who is courageous and attractive. He conducted wars like hunting parties. He was the centre of attention at every festivity and knew the secrets of every court in Europe. But dreams are soon shattered. All too quickly you're pushed out of the carriage and left to make your own way with the rest of the camp followers, like so much troublesome baggage.
Ma'am!
Excellent.
Guard the doors. The guards are to see that neither of you leaves this room.
I fear you have a shortage of troops, Mr. Chamberlain.
Why?
You have no men to guard the chimney hole.
Lieutenant, a close carriage is being ordered for you with a platoon of musketeers. Its destination will be disclosed by His Majesty himself.
You are in great danger, monsieur. Escape while there is still time. I will attempt to distract the guard.
Your delicate skin might get bruised if there were trouble.
I wouldn't be the first woman to win a battle for a man.
But why are you so concerned for my safety? It may well be that I am a rebel.
I would be prepared to help even a regicide.
Because of what they have done to you here.
Well, what do you expect? That I kiss your beautiful eyes and I say, my love, for my sake, flee from here to my country estate, where I will join you before nightfall.
Why should the king involve you in all this?
Vartigny paid his sweethearts. The king just has them arrested.
And you can say that calmly.
Is this a suitable time for compliments, Lieutenant?
Yes, because time is running out.
And is it this same lack of time that obliges me to leave my hand in yours?
Who are you to deny a condemned man his last request? No strings attached.
Not even the condemned man himself.
His Majesty's benevolence stops short of ordering closed carriages, especially for our honeymoon.
More's the pity.
Madame.
I don't pay rewards to Judas McGee. Ta! Make you a lieutenant general.
But sire.
Why not Lord Chamberlain, your impudent son?
Oh, your Majesty.
The snivelling fop.
Thrown out. It's enough to restore my faith in justice.
Do!
Gouty even to polish my boots. What a dreadful morning.
Allow me to offer my congratulations, Lieutenant General. Or should I say, Lord Chamberlain?
The king has been told every word of your rebellious statements. You will find out.
The hour of battle strikes. The guns are loaded. The trumpets call.
And now that rebel.
Lieutenant Delboeuf, His Majesty awaits the pleasure of your company.
Permission to leave you, madame?
Not granted, monsieur. But my word goes for little here. I know what marshals and aspiring marshals are like. The call to battle always comes first, and all a woman can do is trail along.
Divest yourself of your sword, Lieutenant.
My sword?
Yes, sir, your sword, by order of the king.
Very well. But I leave it with madame for safekeeping. My sword, madame. I offer my surrender.
You'll hear my conditions later, God grant.
Michel Delboeuf, Lieutenant, the Roussillon Guards Regiment, begs audience, Your Majesty.
Let him advance. This way, Delboeuf. Meet the swine himself. See him at close quarters in his gilded sty. Bow, man.
Your servant, sire.
Bow deeper.
Sire.
And again.
Surely your majesty does not wish his officers to bow and scrape like lackeys.
What courage. You certainly speak better than you write. It is the reasons detailed above that encourage me, humbly and with all due respect, to request His Majesty to consider my military record and years of service, and to promote me to the rank of captain of the aforementioned Guards Regiment. Did you write this drivel yourself, Durbeuf?
Yes, Your Majesty.
Bad mark to begin with. Good fighting officers are illiterate. Throw this away, Cotin.
At your service, sir.
I take it, Your Majesty, that the audience is over.
Cotin?
Your Majesty?
Did I ask him something?
Your Majesty did not.
Yet I thought I heard him speak.
By Your Majesty's leave, he is an ill-mannered cur.
Cotin, my Chamberlain, writes as well as he speaks, unlike you, Delbert. If I'd never known Cotin,
yes, sir,
I would not be the swine I am.
Sire?
That was the word, Delbert, wasn't it? Tell me. But this particular swine happens to be a wild boar, and his fangs are dangerous. Have you ever hunted wild boar?
As a boy, Your Majesty.
A royal beast, a privilege to chase. What satisfaction when it finally goes down and the hunting horn sounds the kill. Then the head is locked off to be mounted in the hall. My head likewise, Delbert.
I pay no regard to slanderers and crawlers.
Yes, they are crawlers, those Marquis, groveling at my feet. My subject are a people no longer, Delbert. They're a menagerie, with every class of animal. The courtiers are the poodles, their coats trimmed and tails docked, prancing up and down to perform all their clever tricks, reading, writing, and yapping on command. The ministers are the camels, chewing, digesting, and regurgitating whatever I feed them. My marshals are the lions, toothless, weak-kneed from bowing and scraping. I crack my whip and watch. The poodles jump through the hoop, the lions rub themselves against my legs, and the camels spew up gold. But, Delbert, there's one class of animal that does not fit in my menagerie. A wild stallion like you. I'll have to tame you, control you, with bit, saddle, and halter. Or lock you in the stable. The horse box stands outside waiting. I demand your humble apologies. Cotin?
Sir?
Right.
I am awaiting your dictation, Your Majesty.
To the governor of the Bastille prison. Le Palerois, you are hereby instructed to deposit the contents of this carriage in your foulest, darkest cell, and to detain the subject there at His Majesty's pleasure. Apologies, Delbert. You are authorized to withhold visitors, correspondence, and all reading matter. No light. The diet to consist of bread and water. Do you know the Bastille, Delbeuf?
I have not had that pleasure.
Let me tell you what it's like. Is it day or night, you ask yourself? Have I been here a week or a month? You soon tire of this monologue, so you address your bunk or the table, but you don't get much response. Your apologies, Delbeuf. Your bread is like straw. The water tastes brackish. Your gums dry out and crack. Your insides swell, and for hours on end you feverishly begin to touch yourself. Your fingertips trace the outline of your distended stomach, the hollow cheeks, the protruding bones. You count your heartbeat and pulse. Well, later, hallucinations. Lush, grassy fields, glistening with rain, ships calmly riding the waves. And, of course, women. Always the women. Lovely, irresistible, out of reach. Holding their hands out towards you, beckoning and inviting. Apologies, Delbert. You smash your head against the wall. You can't breathe. Your dungeon becomes a reverberating, buzzing seashell. The wind whistling races round and round the cell. A hollow laughter seems to mock you. Then the very floor starts pitching and rolling on the seas of despair. And the king? The king is far away. Has he forgotten the prisoner? Other matters to occupy his mind. And even though corn and flowers may flourish in his glowing warmth, not even his light can pierce the walls of an underground dungeon. Cotin.
Sir?
Pen and paper.
May it please, Your Majesty.
I write a neat hand, you know, Delbeuf. Easy, flowing. The letters of the alphabet are funny things. Upstroke and downstroke. That's all there is to them. But when they spell out Louis, every stroke, up or down, becomes a matter of life or death. Name your accomplices, Dilberth.
Since there exists no plot, sire, there are none.
Not even a female accomplice?
With all due respect, I must ask your majesty to leave Madame Vartigny out of this.
Do you know her well?
I met her for the first time this morning in your antechamber.
Oh. Your acquaintance seems to have developed remarkably quickly. Well, I wish you luck. She's of the same kind as you, a full-blooded runner who can't bear being checked by the reins. So, what about the workhouse for Madame Vartigny? Sewing sackcloth, eating and sleeping in the company of hags and whores and harlots.
The Marquis is a liar, your majesty. Every word he speaks is a calculated lie.
Madame was pleased to call me a thief.
You withhold from her the pension to which she is entitled.
Moreover, she has cast a slur upon the army administration.
Vartigny saw fit to treat her as the lowest camp follower.
Ah, you are being frank with me at last. Delbeuf, what the Marquis told me means nothing to me. What counts in my eyes is the way she spoke in here. What am I to do with a woman who, in the presence of her sovereign, forgets all respect to plead a rebel's cause?
Madame pleaded for me?
The workhouse will teach her. Oh, you shocked? Well, your apologies, Delbeuf, and no harm will come to her. Do you think it right, Lieutenant, to sacrifice the life and happiness of a woman you hardly know to your own pig-headedness? To decide the future of beautiful eyes that will grow bloodshot in the dim light of the workhouse? To risk the body that will waste away, leaving the skin to sag and wrinkle? Let your heart speak, Delbeuf, and tell me what you think.
What I think is the same thing over and over again.
What is it?
I think swine.
Oh, no. This is a memorable day. Madame, had I not put her out, would have called me blackguard.
Sir, I cannot allow such words.
Silence, poodle! Well spoken, Delbeuf. Here you see me in my golden sty, from which I can't escape as long as I live. From the Rhine to the Pyrenees, every stone, every grain of sand is mine. To cross from one side of my kingdom to the other takes 14 days. You can be a man of your own making. If you have ambitions to be a captain, colonel, or what you will, you can go out and, with your sword, win what you want. Battle honors, rank, a woman, the whole world. Yet, when I have ambitions, in what direction can I pursue them? When I reach upwards, my fingers close on thin air. When I reach downwards, everything I touch is altered. Heroes turn into wretches, duchesses trade their virtue, and sworn friends are at daggers drawn. 20 years of this, Delbeuf, and you find yourself growing into an irritable old man who sweeps all the pieces off the chessboard, thwarts a priest's desire to go on serving God in his humble village, trips up prancing marquis, and mocks at stuttering poets. Gautin!
Your servant, sire.
Go tell the guard that the order is withdrawn.
Sire, by your leave, I must...
Jump, poodle!
Order to the guard withdrawn, sire.
What is a captain's annual pay in the army, Delbeuf?
100 gold louis, sire.
Yeah. That wouldn't do for a field marshal's widow, but it's quite enough for a woman of ordinary rank. Collect your captain's commission from the keeper of the Great Seal tomorrow.
Sire, all I can do is...
Spare me your thank yous. This great kingdom of mine is more secure when at least some of the posts are manned by real men.
Sire, I should like to say
that... You've said your piece, my man.
As your majesty commands. And now, by your leave, I will retire.
Ah, Monsieur Cotin.
Well?
I am delighted to see you, or I should have missed the pleasure of saying goodbye to you.
Cotin?
Sire, the guard has been informed.
Your goodbyes to Monsieur, then. Nicely now.
Au revoir, Monsieur Delbeuf.
Smile when you say it, Cotin.
I am back, madame.
Are you free?
The king is not the person he is made out to be.
Are you free to go?
Not without my sword, which I gave you for safekeeping.
Before I return it, you must hear my conditions.
Hear my offer first.
A ransom for the sword of 100 gold louis a year, my captain's pay. You act in the king's spirit if you accept my offer.
I see there are strings attached, monsieur. Take back your sword, and with it, my surrender.
Madame, will you allow me to escort you part of the way home?
Oh, monsieur, I am still in mourning.
So you do find my attentions unwelcome. I shall not detain you any longer.
Being detained by a captain of the guards at His Majesty's pleasure. Isn't that a very proper fate for an officer's wife?
At the King's Pleasure was a play for radio adapted from a Dutch stage play by Jean-Baptiste Coquelin. It was translated by Harry Cliphouse and produced by Herman Fortuyn. The cast was as follows. The Chamberlain on duty, Rolf Lefebvre. The Lieutenant, Nigel Graham. The Widow, Penelope Lee. The Priest, John Richmond. The Marquis of Châtillon, Frank Duncan. The Poet, David Spencer. The King's Doctor, Noel Johnson. The King, Felix Felton. The play was broadcast through the facilities of the Transcription Service of Radio Nederland in Hilversum, Holland.
At the King's Pleasure. All right, now, before we go, if you want to take part in our special program that we actually have coming up, our special two-hour live edition of Happy Station, go to www.patreon.com/PCJ Radio. That's patreon.com/PCJ Radio. Become a patron, and you can take part in that program. Or send us an email, pcjqsl@pcjmedia.com. We're going to end today with Paul Moret and his orchestra with, I love the title of this, Taka, Takata. So until next time, friends, I'm Keith Perron, wishing you well, saying so long, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, adios amigos, and sayonara.